Hey there, hi there, it's Bran. Riding solo again. Some of you might be wondering, are Dave and I still friends? I will let the silence speak for itself. But Dave will be back next episode. I'm excited for today. This is an artist that I've been a fan of for quite a few years now. On a side note, we didn't get into this, but he has one of my favorite versions of Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas. So, happy May to you. Boy, what do we got to get to? The normal stuff. Review the podcast on iTunes. So many of you have done that. If you haven't done it and you listen to this podcast on a bi-weekly basis and you call yourself a fan of the pod, like, can you even say that with any sort of, I don't know, authority? Like, I'm a fan of the pod, but I don't want to review them. Go away. Not really. Please keep listening. But also, please review. It helps us. If we get a lot of different reviews and a lot of good stars, it kind of helps the algorithm a little bit. So if somebody searches music podcasts right now, we don't pop up. I'd like for that to change. So please review us on iTunes. It helps a lot. Also, we do love getting emails. Yourfavoritebandpodcast@gmail.com. Tell us who your favorite band is. We'll see what we can do. We have some magical powers. Not really. But sometimes it works out. Sometimes people are really nice, and so we'll see if your favorite band is nice enough to come on the podcast. Also, follow us on the social medias, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. We're all there. If you go to yourfavoritebandpodcast.com, there's an easy link to get those. So yeah, please follow us. Let us know that you like us. It really helps our self-esteem. Dave and I are friends. I didn't want you guys to go through the whole next 2 weeks thinking that Dave and I aren't friends. We're best friends. I love him dearly, and I hope he comes back to the podcast soon. He is next week. Anyways, let's get to this week. It's a big one. It's a good one. This guy just got off of a tour with Matt Kearney, which, spoiler alert, is the artist in the next episode of Your Favorite Band, so come back for that. But this week, I had the pleasure of talking to the one, the only, the wonderful.
My name is Andrew Bell, and I'm a singer-songwriter from Chicago, Illinois.
That's it. It's happening. Andrew Bell, right now, Your Favorite Band Podcast, yourfavoritebandpodcast.com, yourfavoritebandpodcast@gmail.com, Your Favorite Band Podcast on the social medias. Do it. We love you. Let's go. Andrew grew up in a not-so-musical house in Chicago and didn't really fall in love with music until a little bit later in life.
Yeah, I wasn't really musical growing up. My sisters were. They were the ones taking piano lessons and recitals and things like that, and I just wasn't really interested until, I think I remember being in eighth grade and the Counting Crows were on the radio. You know, this is like 1998, this is 20 years ago, the Counting Crows are like breaking on the radio, and I'm, you know, around here, and Mr. Jones, these songs that I'm hearing, I really loved them, and I wanted to learn how to play them. My dad had a guitar that he knew like basic guitar chords, and so he was always kind of fiddling around with that, and so I asked him if he would teach me how to play these songs I was hearing on the radio, and that was really kind of where that began. And it's funny because he actually had his guitar was a 12 string acoustic guitar, so which was, as a 13-year-old kid, that was like, guitar is hard enough to learn when you're young, and then on top of that, you know, a 12 string guitar is even harder. But so I actually think I was probably a better guitar player for it because I had to learn on a harder instrument. But and then I got into high school and I was more into sports and stuff. You know, I was playing basketball and football. And like I said, my sisters were much more musical than I was. But then at some point, I started playing in bands with my friends. We started teaching each other guitar chords. And and things that we'd learned. But I was always kind of like the behind the scenes guy. Like I played bass and I wasn't singing at all. I wasn't writing any songs. I really just wanted an excuse to hang out with my friends. And then in college, I just kind of continued that and I discovered songwriting. I actually thought, you know, I actually sat down and put pen to paper and tried to write and enjoyed that process. And I was a pretty terrible singer. And so I had to kind of just figure out how to sing these songs that I was writing. And that's been, you know, 12 years in the making, you know, from then until now, trying to figure out how to sing professionally without any formal training, you know. And so it's just been kind of a very do-it-yourself kind of ease into being a full-time, you know, musician. Now that I'm, you know, I'll be 34 this year. I've been doing music for about 12 years and kind of just got into it by accident, to be honest with you.
In college, Andrew began to work on music, writing music, and working on his craft. And in 2010, he put out his first album, The Ladder.
Even though The Ladder in 2010 was like my first real album released, I had put out a few things before that, just, you know, experimenting. And when I was a senior in college, this is like 2006, about exactly 12 years ago, actually, I was studying business in college, and I wasn't that excited about what I was going to do with that afterward. A lot of my friends and were interviewing for jobs and getting jobs, and I don't know, just didn't excite me at all. And yet I was about to graduate with a marketing degree, and I had always loved songwriting, and really truly I just wanted to be in a band and play music for a living. And so I thought to myself, you know, I'm 20 years old. Why not just kind of give it a shot? You know, it'll never be as easy to try out music as it is right now. So somehow I had the wisdom to come to that conclusion. And I moved home to Chicago, where I grew up, and I started playing. And I had a really good friend who was kind of doing the same thing. And so he didn't go to school, so he was at home playing around town. And I kind of got him to tell me, you know, where the places around town were to play. You know, like open mics and bars, and like Potbelly sandwich shop was another one that employed, if you're familiar with, it's sort of a regional sandwich thing place, but like they employ musicians to come for a couple hours and play during lunchtime, and they give you a little bit of money and a sandwich. And so those were my earliest gigs. And then I realized, okay, I was making a little bit of money, like for tips and CD sales and playing, and I thought, okay, well, maybe I could like make a real job out of this, and I could just find other bars and restaurants to pay me to play for a couple hours at a time. So for probably about 2 years, my job was, you know, probably 5 or 6 days a week, just all around the Chicagoland area, playing in bars and restaurants, mostly cover music, you know, for 2 or 3 hours at a time. And it was comfortable. And I needed that time because I didn't really know, I don't know, I still had a lot to learn at that point. I had never really performed live before, so a lot of those early performances, I was really just kind of working out the kinks and learning how to sing in front of people, learning how to battle your nerves, learning how to sing in a microphone, which is so different than just singing by yourself in the car or whatever. And there's just just a very steep learning curve that I just kind of jumped off the cliff and figured out, and spent a couple years figuring out. And as I did that, like my musical taste was changing over the years, and I was, you know, figuring out that, you know, maybe vocally I sounded better in this, you know, singing. Maybe at first my music was a little bit softer and quieter because as a insecure vocalist, you know, the tendency is just to like sing quieter, you know. And so a lot of my early music was like a lot more chill, folky, acoustic stuff. I was really into Damien Rice, Sufjan Stevens, and Dennison Whitmer, kind of these more folk acoustic guys. I just kind of found my niche in that zone because it was just a little safer and a little easier. And then I found a producer just randomly. You know, some friend was like, "Hey, man, you should meet up with my friend Matt. You know, he's got a recording studio. He should record some of these songs you've written. And so I did, you know, on a whim, and I hired this guy to help make my very first EP. It was called All Those Pretty Lights EP. And so this is like my first real recording experience, which was, once again, a very steep learning curve as far as, you know, performing like on the spot in front of a microphone. And I somehow got through that process. It took like 6 months to make 5 songs. It was just such a difficult process for me. We finally got it finished, and I put it out, and I had a little bit of success just completely randomly out in Los Angeles. This a DJ out in Los Angeles somehow stumbled upon my song, played it on the radio. He also, that same DJ, was also a music supervisor for a television show, and so he decided to license that song for TV. And so, you know, that was kind of my first little break. And through that little blip on the radar, my a manager found me. He became my longtime manager, very integral to all of the, you know, everything else that I've had in the last 10 years. And so, yeah, it was just sort of like this little accident where I, you know, ended up on the radio in LA and then found a great manager, and then met some people playing an open mic, and they invited me to come down to Nashville and make and just kind of hang and write and record and stuff. And so I did, just on a whim. And then I ended up meeting my very first producer down there, who made my first real record, The Ladder. And we hit it off. And so that's how I ended up in Nashville making that first record in 2009. I was there recording it. And as we were recording it, it felt like something special. And I, like I said, I just had acquired a new manager who was really sharp and on top of stuff. And he helped me figure out how to release a record properly. And, you know, my grandparents loaned me a small amount of money to help, get it off the ground, you know, to print copies and to master it and to, hire a publicist and all these things that my manager taught me to do. And, and that's how I've, you know, released that first record, just kind of not really knowing what I was doing, just luckily surrounding myself with the right people.
Despite having more of a singer-songwriter style, Andrew opted to put out a remix version of The Ladder, which isn't something that you see super often in the singer-songwriter community.
My manager, who I was just mentioning, his name is Seth, and he kind of dabbled in various genres of music. He came from not just like a singer-songwriter world, but much more eclectic, and so he was kind of familiar with the EDM dance world, and he knew that there was a huge crossover opportunity and that a lot of artists were kind of doing this, you know, lending their tracks to dance and house DJs and letting them kind of reinterpret the songs. And so he encouraged me to do it just as like, you know, an extra asset to have. You know, like, you never know what random song could just end up being a hit, you know, on the dance charts or the house circuit, you know. So it was his idea. He found this group of DJs to remix the songs, and I don't know, I was pretty particular about it. Like, I did, and in the end, I told him we could do it, but I just, let's take out the vocals so it's more about the music. And there's very little vocal in the whole thing. But yeah, to me that just seemed like a little more interesting and kind of quirky. And I didn't want it to be cheesy. That was my thing. I was just like, man, I'll do this, but if there's a way that we can make this a little avant-garde, that would be cool. And so that was kind of our compromise. It was like we took away the vocal and we had to make it more of an instrumental remix. So
after The Ladder, Andrew decided he wanted to mess around a little bit with his style, and Black Bear came out sounding a lot different than The Ladder.
I made that first record, and then I began touring it. And so my primary performance of that record was, you know, me playing the acoustic guitar and then having kind of a traditional 4-piece band, you know, drums and bass and electric guitar and sometimes piano. I toured a lot in the wake of that album release. And then I wrote a couple more songs for this the EP called The Daylight. And then fast forward, you know, I guess 3 years later, I just wasn't, I don't know, I guess I was kind of burned out on that sound. At the same time, I you know, M83 was kind of popping up on the radar, and I was listening to more of that style of like alternative electronics sounding stuff, like synthesizer driven stuff. And I remember specifically I was on a flight. I was flying to Germany or somewhere like that to perform, and I was flying home and I was watching that. There's this movie called Drive with Ryan Gosling, and I was watching it on the plane, and it's a pretty heavy and kind of dark movie, but the soundtrack is like this really light, airy synth pop thing that just really contrasts the heaviness of the movie. And I love writing. When I write a song, I actually tend to write maybe like heavier, more sometimes darker subject matter, and yet I love the idea of kind of like the juxtaposition of like heavy subject matter with light synthy pop music. And so that was kind of when I decided that that was what I wanted to do. And I remember feeling like, you know, my manager was kind of opposed to that idea. He was, at the time, he's like, I think you need to follow the success of your first record. You know, what's meet in the middle? You know, we could do something like a little more like twang, you know, kind of like the way Bon Iver kind of still incorporates acoustic instruments into his records, or like the Lumineers or whatever. And I just wasn't interested in it. And I knew it was the right decision because it was the only thing that was making me excited about making another record, was the idea of diving into this sort of new alternative synth electronic world. And so I bought some software and a little MIDI keyboard, and I just started kind of tinkering around and writing songs on a keyboard instead of a guitar. And I just found it really refreshing. It just opened up the possibilities of what I could do songwriting wise. And around the same time, I went out and I was touring for a couple of weeks. I was opening for Ben Rector, and in Ben's band was this guy named Chad, who I didn't really realize it at the moment, but Chad was also Ben's producer. He's playing in the band, but he also helped make his last couple of records. And so after the tour, we were all friends, and Chad invited me to come down to Norman, Oklahoma, you know, next time I had some songs to record, and we'd try it out. And I knew that his vibe and style was a lot more alternative and synthesizer driven. Like, he's a huge analog synth guy. And I flew down to Oklahoma with a couple of songs from the Blackberry record, a couple of demos that I'd written, and Pieces and The Enemy, I think, were the two songs that I brought with me. And we spent a couple of days working on them together, and it just immediately clicked. I just knew that this was kind of my guy, you know, and he was so good at achieving the sound I wanted to achieve. And this little crew of people, it was me and Chad, and then he has a partner that he runs the studio with named Jared, who's kind of the guitar guy. And then he also flew in his secret weapon, a guy who's a drummer. His name's James McAllister. He lives in Los Angeles, and he's just an incredible kind of X factor all around musician guy. The four of us made Blackbear together as like a kind of almost like a band. You know, even though it was my record and it was my songs that I'd written, it was like bringing it to life with these guys over the course of a couple months back in 2012. Felt like I was like working with a band, you know, and everyone kind of had their thing to contribute to the sound and the landscape of the record. That's why it ended up sounding just so much different than my last project before that.
With having changed styles a little bit, I was wondering if the songwriting process changed. How does Andrew Bell write a song?
I mean, back in the day, it was just kind of, you know, grab my guitar and sit there and fumble through some chords and kind of, you know, and it's funny when you're first writing, when you're young and you're just writing songs for the first time, it's kind of like, you know, nothing that you're doing have you ever done before, and so everything is new, you know. And it's funny, you know, and I just released my third record, and I think I've probably written, I actually haven't written that many songs relative to, you know, how long I've been doing this, maybe like 50 songs. But it's funny, the more you do it, the more it's like, oh well, yeah, I already did that in my last record, and I already you know, this chord combination I've already used before. You start to, it gets trickier because you start to run out of don't know, your natural instincts. It's like, oh man, you start to realize like, oh, I do that all the time, you know, and how do I do something new? And so my last record, actually, I started soliciting after the Black Bear thing. I was writing, wanting to make another record, and I wanted to make it with the same group of guys I'd made Black Bear with, because it was just such a great fit. And so Chad and I, he started kind of just sending me little ideas for songs that he worked up. And James, the X Factor guy I was telling you about, he did the same. And so actually a bunch of the songs on this most recent record, probably four, I think, stemmed from little 60-second ideas that those guys had sent me. And it was actually really refreshing to get song ideas from a third party. Generally, especially musicians of the caliber as these guys, it's like they're going to approach chord combinations and sounds way differently than my instincts. And so it's actually really great and refreshing to allow someone else into the process, which is something I haven't done a lot of over the years. But I find that it's really crucial in kind of like pushing the boundaries of how I write. And so even now, you know, after three records in, I'm kind of home from tour again, and I'm writing again and starting to record again and stuff. And kind of doing the same thing, actually. He sends me ideas, you know, for song, like little song start ideas. And then I dive into them and start writing choruses and verses. And then, you know, I've evolved over the years, you know, as far as like my engineering ability. I'm a little more knowledgeable now as far as how to record my own stuff, record my own vocals, make better sounding demos, and you know, just other software that opens up the possibilities for different sounds that I can play around with. So yeah, a lot of times I'll just kind of bring in like a drum beat, you know, to start off with something kind of cool and inspiring, and then I'll just search around for a synthesizer keyboard sound until I find something that resonates, and then I just kind of create a little 30-second something, and then I will typically turn on my microphone and just start kind of fiddling around and trying to find the register, trying to find like the cadence that, you know, that sounds cool, the melody. Usually lyrics are kind of the last thing that come in. It's like cadence and melody happen first, and once I feel like I've got a good feel, then I start dropping in words that kind of match that, and then from there I start figuring out what the song's about. It's which actually kind of sounds like you know, the opposite of what normally I think a lot of times people will determine, like, I'm gonna write a song about this subject today, and then they sit down and they write it. And I'm actually usually the opposite. For me, it's more about the feel, and then it's about figuring out what I want to write about later. Yeah, so that's kind of my process these days.
Andrew successfully put out three albums fully independently. What is it like being an independent artist? And why, after all these years, does he remain independent?
Well, yeah, I mean, when I first began, it was just like, you know, it's necessity. It was like, okay, no one's, you know, no one's offering to put this out, so I'm going to put this out on my own. And then, when my manager came into the picture and he had a lot more ideas and stuff, it just, yeah, I think it was his advice to release it independently and to kind of start trying to create a foundation that we can then hopefully one day maybe leverage into a deal of some kind. But the first record release was so successful as an independent artist that when it came time to make the second record, it was just kind of like, well, you know, we got offers, you know, there were offers to do deals, but nothing that made sense. It was like, none of these offers that we're getting, we actually stand to benefit way more from just doing this independently and continuing to do it. So I don't know, three records in, I feel like I've been really lucky to establish a really nice, like, global fan base. Just a lot, mostly from television stuff. There's obviously the bulk of my audience is here in the United States, but there's a lot of the television shows that my music has been on is really popular in Europe and Asia and South America and Australia. Thankfully I've gotten to this point now where I can release music, you know, tomorrow if I want to, and and I can, you know, reasonably expect that, like, a good amount of people are going to discover it and find out about it. And so, I don't know, you know, I am curious to see what, I don't know. I think what I'm going to, my plan is to make another record and then reevaluate, you know, what the best strategy is to go, you know, going forward. I am curious to see what that experience would be like to work with a record that, or a label that believed in the music and wanted to put money behind it to help, because essentially that's what we're talking about. We're talking about, like, putting money behind to market your album so that more people discover it and, you know, radio and things like that, things that I can't really do on my own. And so, yeah, I am curious. I'm not opposed to it. But, you know, like anything, it would just have to be kind of be the right fit. And yeah, if it's not, then I'm totally cool to continue release independently as well. It's worked out really well to this point.
Andrew put out his third album, Dive Deep, 4 years after Black Bear. What took him so long to create a new album? And how was recording this one different than the other two?
I put out Black Bear. I toured, I think, for about 6 months on that record. And then I came home, and then I did a little bit more touring that following year. It's pretty tough for me to... touring, for me at least, is just pretty rigorous, and it's like all consuming. And so I can't really create music on Monday and then tour on Tuesday. You know, it's kind of, that's more like seasonal for me. So it's just how it's been like this for all my records, actually. The Ladder, Black Bear, Dive Deep. I put out the record, I tour it, and then I come home and it's time to shut it down and make another record. And I don't know why my brain works that way, but it's just easier for me to do it seasonally. And so, yeah, typically, you know, it just takes a while to put out the record, and then you tour it, and then you come home, and then you can start the writing process, which for me, I don't write. I try to write just the best quality songs and just fewer of them, typically, instead of just the other approach would be just write 100 songs and then, you know, choose the best 10 and maybe 70 of them are just kind of rubbish. But I've never loved that idea. I don't know. It's just spending my time working on something that I don't totally believe in or love. It just seems I can't do it. And it seems counterintuitive. And so generally it just takes me a really long time to write 10 songs that I love and believe in and think are special. And, you know, which should, I mean, it probably should be the case, honestly, unless you're like this super prolific person. But I don't feel like I really necessarily always have that much important things to say or to write about, you know? And so it takes me a little bit of time to feel like, you know, to have ideas or have thoughts about things that I want to say. And so, and then once that process is done, then it's time to record. And recording for me typically over the years has been something I'm getting better at it. I'm getting faster, but it's still just a slow process. And, and so, yeah, that being said, though, I've recognized that it's taken like 4 years between each of my records to come out. And I do want to cut that time down significantly. So I'm already, like I said, I'm already home ahead of schedule, you know, writing and recording in hopes that I can, you know, put whatever my next thing is will come out, you know, maybe 2 years instead of 4 years after the last one. So we'll see.
After putting out two albums that are stylistically similar, is he getting tired of this style? Is he going to do some new dramatic shift like he did between The Ladder and Black Bear?
I think I found a nice little zone. I think apart from, you know, my taste changing, that was definitely a part of it. But also it took me a couple of years to like find my niche a little bit, you know, and I think I've kind of narrowed in on it. Chad Copeland, my producer, and that team of guys I was telling you about before, it seems like it took me a while to find them, but now that I have, it seems like I've kind of got a nice thing going. And I think if anything, maybe one thing I would like to do is kind of continue in the same vein sonically, but maybe start pairing things back a little bit, maybe not so much production. You know, there's some songs I've put out that I listen to now and I'm like, man, we really layered a lot of production on these songs, and I think it'd be kind of cool to strip away a little bit of it. And then also maybe just kind of maybe just pushing the boundaries a little bit more into the like more slightly more alternative genre, and just kind of seeing if we can kind of, you know, push the boundaries again of you know what a singer songwriter is. This is Andrew Bell, and you're about to listen to one of my new songs called Black Clouds.
How many of you out there?